Well, I'm very pleased to welcome to Fremantle Shipping News, Jordan Goetzer. Jordan, you've got a doctorate in what? Marine science, amongst other things, but now you are an author with your friend Paul Yoda Iskov. Now, do I pronounce his name correctly?
Yeah, that's correct. Yep.
Well, congratulations on this book that you've just had published by UWA Publishing, Scale to Tail. Now, I think you're not a chef, but I think you are, do I correctly suggest, a marine scientist?
Yeah, that's correct. I'd say I'm more of a cook, but marine scientist. Yeah, I did my PhD and, yeah, currently still working as a marine scientist in conservation.
Well, how did you get to be a cook? I suppose you're qualifying yourself as a cook for the purposes of producing this book. How did that all happen?
Yeah, so from a very young age, I've been a very keen fisher. I used to sort of go out with my dad as early as I could, and over the years, coming into research and conservation and fisheries management, I came to realise the things that I love to catch and eat. It was important to ensure that we do that sustainably. So I've sort of always experimented in the kitchen and tried to find ways of cooking things sustainably. So it's a funny mix, studying the things that I also like to eat. But I suppose it's all about that balance, trying to find that balance between my extractive activities and fishing and ensuring that we are conserving things for future generations.
So tell us a little bit about the genesis of this book. How did the two of you decide that you wanted to do something like this?
Yeah, so I've known Yoda or Paul for a very long time now. We both grew up surfing in Albany, which is really great. And we talked to each other through the years as he developed into a very good chef. He works for a fine dining restaurant or traveling restaurant called Favor, and they travel all over the state doing outdoor dinners and using native ingredients. So he would come to me quite often when he was using seafood and ask questions about whether it was sustainable and how to use it. And likewise, when I'm out fishing and I catch some of these different fish, I'd pick his brains and find different ways or interesting ways to use all of the fish and to cook it differently. So yeah, it's a really great collaboration with a great friend that goes a long way back.
It's interesting, this whole concept of sustainability, which I understand the book, the cookbook, is dedicated to. People increasingly want to eat local. They want to know that their food hasn't travelled with too many carbon miles behind it. They also want to know that it's been wild. Farmed, if I can use the expression, in relation to wild and not being fed in some captured place, for example, if it's a salmon. And I gather you're dedicated to that, but you also don't want to see any waste. And that's the whole notion of scale to tail. And you see this also for those who are carnivorous and eat meat. They want to see the whole of the animal utilised and not just thrown away. Do you find a lot of resistance these days to the concept that all of the fish, or just about all of it, can be used, can be cooked, can be eaten?
Yeah, so I suppose that sort of ethos goes back a fair way. I did a lot of work overseas in various different countries, particularly in Fiji, and that's where I really learnt that in some of these other countries, they're a lot better than us in some regards at utilising all of the fish and diversifying and catching different fish. So in Fiji, they'll keep pretty much any fish. There's a story that I love where I asked one of the locals I'd worked with what their favourite fish was to eat, and he said the one that he could catch, and, which is quite different to us here. And yeah, they'd the head of the fish is the most prized part of the fish over there and always goes to the chief. So coming back to Australia, We do have really good fisheries management and we've got really good conservation management, but I sort of saw this as an area that some of Australians could improve on, and that's, yeah, utilising all the fish that we do catch. A few of us are not so great with that. So we're really trying to encourage people, rather than filleting and throwing the rest away, to try to eat things whole. Or if you do fillet, to use some of the bits that you would normally be destined for the bin. And yeah, so far we haven't really had too much resistance. There's a few people that might be a little bit squeamish when it comes to actually eating, say, the head. But we came up with a few tricks for those people as well. And that's quite simple things like cooking a curry with the head in, and then just picking all the flesh off the head. And it's no different to a curry that is used to fillet, and probably I'd say better, because you get the flavour of the bones and stuff like that imparted into the curry.
It's interesting, isn't it, Jordan, just reflecting myself when I was just a kid in the 1950s, my maternal grandfather would come down to the southwest where we were living, and on the way he would shoot a couple of pigeons and later a kangaroo, and came from an era when European people even did that here. And if you go to Europe and you're up in the Alps, you find people take a sort of native sheep with a license, and people eat in more of a hunting and gathering way in many parts of the world. Yet here we want the best part of the lamb. We're not prepared to have something that's a bit older. When it comes to fish, we want a nice thick white piece of fillet. We're not interested in any other part of that fish. Have we just become too soft, if you'll excuse the expression? Have our taste buds changed, or are we put off by the look of things?
Yeah, I don't know. And I'm glad you brought that up, because when I sort of say Australians, I don't mean all Australians. There's certainly a lot of ethnic groups that don't waste, that live over here, and the traditional owners, certainly a lot of them are a lot better than what we are. So it's not everyone that's doing that. The European heritage and those sort of things that sort of traditionally people did used to use a lot more. And I think maybe just partly we're a bit spoilt for choice over here. Like I said, we do have really great fisheries management and quite healthy ecosystems at the moment. So we are sport for choice, but we're not guaranteed that it's always going to be that way. So that's where I thought the book was important. Is it's a way for consumers to do their part to eat sustainably and ensure that we're looking after the marine environment as well.
Now, let's take some examples. I love to go down to Myall up just south of Perth before you get to Bunbury. A lot of beach fishing done there. I'm a little bit like the Fijian. I love any fish that I can catch. And occasionally I catch a tailor and take the fillets off it. I imagine on a small fish like that, there's probably not too much else to be eaten, to be foraged with. There's not too much scale to tail, or is there?
Yeah, there definitely is. Yeah, tailor, you could very easily use the head and the frame to make a fish stock, probably my best recommendation there. And if you catch more than one, you can chuck in multiple heads and frames. And it's a fish stock is really quite simple to make. You just basically chuck it in with a heap of vegetables and boil it down for a while. And then the idea is that you can use that fish stock in a whole series of recipes. There's quite a few that are featured in the book. So you can put it in things like luxes or bisques or anything really that uses stock or even vegetable stock. If you replace that with a sort of homemade fish stock, it'll taste a lot better than any of the store-bought options.
Now, if I then decide to head up to Coral Bay, Ningaloo Way, and go out, not on a boat that I've got, but perhaps someone's charter, drop a few long lines and pull up a couple of sweet lips or the like, what am I going to do with a bigger fish? How will it differ from what you've just told me about how to deal with the tailor?
Yeah, so a friend of mine and I, we actually go up and camp up that way every year. And we've got some tricks up our sleeve from some of the fishing we do up there. So what we do with the bigger fish is because it's often hard to sort of do some of the recipes if you are out camping, we fillet the fish up there, but rather than throwing away the rest of the fish, there's a really cool technique. Again, it's in the book, where you can actually take what's called fish ribs off the fish rather than I would have used to have thrown it away with the frame. So we take the ribs off and we use the head as well every now and again in a stock and the wings as well. But the ribs are great actually because, it's a very simple sort of way to change your filleting to take these off. And they've got a really nice sort of layer of fat on the inside, which makes them really delicious. And we simply just panko those up. And we tend to eat sort of the ribs and the other parts and then bring some of the fillets back home. So at least we're not wasting anything while we're up there. And we've still got the bonus of taking the fillets back home. And some of those bigger fish are really great. The bigger the fish, the better those ribs are.
I'm assuming there are some parts of fish that that nonetheless do get thrown to the seagulls or back into the water or otherwise conveyed to an appropriate waste spot. But what are they?
Oh, there's pretty much not a lot in a fish that you can't eat, really. I'd say probably just the stomach contents, the one thing that I'd steer clear of. You don't really know what some fish have been eating. But, we use the swim bladder, which is a white sort of organ in the fish that controls the buoyancy of a fish, so whether it sinks or floats. And, again, that's this sort of quite fatty, got this quite fatty texture. And Yoda came up with a great way of preparing that. There's an easy way and then there's the Yoda chef way. But the Yoda chef way, if you dry them out, and then deep fry them, they essentially turn into pork crackle. And interestingly, they still get sort of that pork taste. And we've served these to a lot of people and you wouldn't really even know that you're eating the offal of a fish. And they're, really, really good.
Perhaps we need to change some of the language around food that we eat. you use the word offal and the like.
Yeah.
But the other thing, good point.
Yeah. I'll touch on that actually because it's a very good point. And there are some names of fish that put people off. So, for example, goatfish. People are really sort of, it doesn't sound too appealing to eat a goatfish. But they're very popular again in Europe. They call them red mullet over in Europe, or in France they're called rouget. So we actually trialed putting them in and calling them rouget instead of goatfish. And so it'll be interesting to see if people are more inclined to try them just by giving them a different name.
The thing about the colour of fish, I had a nice piece of mackerel from a fish shop near where I live in Fremantle the other day, and so the edge part were quite brown. What is it about the fish that it has that colour when it ceases to be pure white, if you like?
Yeah, so that'd just be a bit of extra blood content in the flesh. So your pure white flesh would have less sort of blood, and that's why you get tuna that have quite red flesh compared to other fish. But again, there's nothing wrong with that. It sort of depends. I prefer those fishier tasting fish, like your mackerel and that stuff, but not everyone does. And again, if you use that in different ways, that it can actually be quite good. So again, in a stock, or if you want to put it in some fish cakes, for example, something like a fish cake can handle that much stronger flavor fish than just eating it straight on the barbie if you're worried about that sort of different color flesh.
Now, do the two of you have any particular stance on what we might call unwild farmed fish?
Unwild farmed fish. That's a tricky one. Yeah, I tend to sort of steer clear of aquaculture. There's some great examples. For aquaculture, I'd be going more for the shellfish type species. So things like your mussels are pretty good examples of sustainable aquaculture. But yeah, I pretty much steer clear of aquaculture for some species at the moment, maybe because I'm a little bit spoilt and I can sort of go out and catch some fish myself But yeah, if you are going aquaculture, there are some really great options, and I'd be steering people towards things like oysters and mussels, which are some of the most sustainable forms of aquaculture out there.
What do you hope in the end that your book will achieve? Are you plainly wanting people to think about making sure resources, particularly seafood resources, are used more sustainably, but you have a wider objective?
Yeah, so that's why we came up with those three aims, or the sort of scale to tail philosophy.
Yes.
Which is to diversify. The first one, diversify what we eat, try to sort of broaden the range of seafood we consume, so we're really not just hammering one or two of the larger species that tend to be more vulnerable. And the second is to encourage, I'd love to see people eating more whole fish. Sometimes it's actually much easier to prepare a whole fish than filleting it. And I think there's some really great examples in the book that I think are actually tastier than eating a fillet if you're prepared to cook it whole. But we also understand that it's not possible, like the scenario I gave of camping, to eat everything whole. So if you do fillet, then yeah, the third sort of goal or aim for us is to try to encourage people to use some of those products that would normally be thrown away. So your fish ribs, your head in a curry, or your wings or stuff like that. So they're the three behaviours that we'd really love to see changed in sort of the way people consume seafood.
Do you find that retailers of fish sort of need some encouragement to respond to what you've just said?
Yeah, and they don't need a lot. So, for example, Finn's Seafood is a really great place to get seafood that we've tried before, and simply by us asking for some of these different things, they're more than prepared to happy at it. At the end of the day, they're running a business, and the more people that ask for these things, the more likely they are to try to supply them. And they're one of the guys that I've reached out to a few times and have come through with some of these things that can be more difficult to get at other fishmongers. But yeah, for the consumers out there, I'd just say just keep asking. And another great sort of, in the book, we've got these little stories. So we call them sustainable tales for each recipe. And one of the curries in there is a really great example of some friends that go to a little fishmonger in a market. And what they've found is that this fishmonger was actually selling pet food. And they asked what the pet food was, and it was simply the offcuts of some of the fillets, so that the fillets looked nice and neat. And they were cutting that up and selling that as pet food. And they asked, oh, is that okay for us to eat? And sure enough, yeah, they were like, yeah, it's perfectly fine. It's just the actual flesh of really high quality fillets that are cut off, and perfect for a curry because you've already got that fish cut up. And yeah, essentially it's less work. You've got nice fish cut up for you, and yeah, the bonus is much, much cheaper than buying a fillet. So there's some really great examples like that of buying fish too.
I'm pleased you mentioned that. I'm very close to a retailer called Sea Lanes in Fremantle, and they do just that. And you can also buy your fish buy your fish whole there, and they'll fillet it for you, but they'll also offer you everything back, the head and the lot.
That's really good.
It is good. Yeah. It gets you thinking about what you've written about. Do you have a favourite way to cook fish? I know it'll depend on what it is you're cooking. You've mentioned curries a number of times, and it's certainly a lovely way to cook fish, isn't it? It hardly needs to go into the boiling broth and it's cooked. But other ways, do you love to put it on over the coals? Do you love to poach it? Or do you do all of those things and love them equally?
Yeah, a real mix of things. So I'll give you two examples that are some of my favourite. There's a scorpion fish, which is this really cool sort of red fish, which I'd say is an example of something that's not kept very often. It can spike you and you get a really small fillet off them. So I was really sort of happy with that recipe because we cook that whole and we tried a really interesting technique where you cook it in the oven and then heat up some oil to a very high temperature, and you can actually leave the scales on that fish and rough them up a little bit and then pour this searing hot oil over it, which will crisp the skin up and crisp the scales up, and you can actually eat the scales and everything whole in that. So that's a very interesting way of eating a fish, and it's also a very sustainable way because that fish is particularly hard to fillet, and you sort of, instead of feeding one person from that fish, you'll be able to feed at least two or three. And the other one was a friend of mine that was doing her PhD at the same time as me, and that's a salt crust, which again is a very interesting way of cooking a fish whole, but a very easy way. It's really just pack the fish and cover it with salt and water and a bit of egg white, and it'll seal up. And the beauty of that is, again, you don't need to skin the fish or scale the fish. You leave all that on, seal it up, and it traps all the moisture inside. And that's probably the best fish I've ever eaten, is a whole fish done in a salt crust.
Wow. Now tell me, how did you come to learn these techniques? Is it a matter of, as you traveled around the world, different places within Australia, talking to some older people perhaps, or just trial and error that you found different methods of cooking?
Yeah, I'd say a little bit all of the above, really. Certainly a lot of the recipes were crowdsourced. So we got some really cool recipes just from asking some of the recreational fishers to send stuff in, and some great ideas from them. And then also we put the word out to a few professional chefs and got some really great responses. There's a couple of guest chefs that feature in there. Also probably the third thing is, just trial and error. Over the years, I love fishing so much that I've got the privilege of catching quite a few fish over my time and trialing different things. And of course, having Yoda on board, he's a wealth of knowledge in terms of any of that sort of stuff. So, a bit of all of the above, I think.
I have to ask you, the readers of this post on Fremantle Shipping News and people listening to this little podcast will say, why is this guy called Yoda? They'll remember Yoda as a diminutive and wise old culture from Star Wars. What about our Yoda?
You're not the first person to ask that. And I think if you ask him, he'll tell you it's because he's a master chef, but that's not the real reason. So if you ever run into him at one of his dinners, you'll have to ask him the real reason.
All right. Well, that'll encourage people to suss out his dinners, although
he
may not confide. We'll find out. Jordan, it's been lovely talking with you. I'm sure this is a work not only of passion, but dedication. To get a book out, doesn't matter what you're writing, just takes great effort. You were well trained, no doubt, from your PhD dissertation. But what was the gestation period of the book, and how do you feel now that you've got it out? Is there something else in the pipeline?
Yeah, so we started over 6 years ago now, and interestingly, that's because we started with an ebook. We got a really great community grant from Recfish West to do an ebook, and we did that up. And at the time, I sort of wasn't really thinking about doing a hard book. I'm not sure why. And we did the ebook, and we also feature a lot of really great imagery, both the food and some lifestyle shots of the coastline from a guy called Mick Sippy, who's also a good friend of ours that grew up surfing with in Albany. And once we did it, it just looked so great that we're like, oh, we've got to turn this into a hard copy. And that's where we were lucky enough to team up with UWA Publishing and have the book out now. But yeah, it's pretty fresh. It's only been launched about a week ago, so I'm certainly not ready to jump back into a second one just yet. But we'll see how this one goes first.
You'll probably be fighting off a commercial contract proposal to become master chefs and raconteurs on seafood on national television.
We'll see, hey? We'll see.
Anyway, congratulations on the book. Congratulations to you and Yoda, and I hope it really sells well. People like me will be really wanting to read it to to be encouraged to do what you recommend, and also to learn some fabulous new recipes. So thanks for meeting me today.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me.
That's, oops, what have I done?